This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Just Rugby NZ. We will talk about anything as long as it's rugby. I'm Grant Harding, and with me to talk is Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. And Campbell, the All Blacks' dream of an unbeaten Northern Hemisphere tour ended at Stade de France. A 17-10 halftime lead turning into a 30-29 defeat. Agonising indeed. In the first half, the All Blacks' forwards dominated scrums and lineouts. There were brilliant tries to Peter Larkai and Cam Roygaard, but somehow the French hung in. The All Blacks not quite able to ram home their advantage, a couple of occasions killing their own momentum. And then after half-time, it was the French who came out and made the crucial early plays. A building called Emmanuel Miafou ran down the field, and from then on, France were in the game with two tries by the 51-minute mark. Your thoughts?
Yes, Grant, very much the one that got away from the All Blacks. I mean, even in that first half, although it was a pretty good half overall by the All Blacks, that wasn't flawless. They were getting real pressure at the breakdown. They were untidy in some of their pushed passes, but they had a good platform to work off, as you say, at set piece. But just losing a couple of those key moments in that second half. I think the last six scoring plays were all kicks, goal kicks. So it was going up in multiples of three. And France just had the better wherewithal. I didn't think we got as much pay off our bench as previously. Certainly that substitution of Cam Roygaard in the 53rd minute wasn't the way to go, as Ruttimer didn't come on and offer the same impact. So small margins, but the All Blacks very disappointed to lose that one because they had it right in their grasp.
Well, towards the end of the first half, I thought, especially in that last couple of minutes that when they were attacking very strongly, the All Blacks, they seemed to lose their attacking shape there. I mean, it was a bruising and brutal game and players just didn't seem to be able to reform their attack at that point. But Barrett was forced to have a drop goal, which missed. Second half, execution again has come back to bite the All Blacks. I mean, Jordan picked a long high pass to Clark instead of soft hands to a Savia coming around the corner when it had all been soft hands, it had all been short passes, and suddenly a long pass when you're 5 metres out from the goal line. Vi getting hit hard, trying to offload when the numbers were not good, tried as France. I actually think Beauden Barrett should have kicked from that play. There were still opportunities. Tamati Williams had the ball knocked away when making a pass. At 26-27, Satiti, excellent turnover penalty, but then from the line-out, he delivered a terrible ball to Ratama, who knocked it on. And then the old discipline, a neck roll, whatever you think of that, it was still, I actually think the ref may have got it right. And that's another penalty, 30-26. We come back to 30-29. With 6 minutes to play, we get down there. Rico Ioane, he was unable to hold what was probably a difficult pass, potential try-scoring situation, you might say, but also a situation where pressure could have led to another penalty opportunity. Execution has been a bugbear this year.
Certainly has. And once again, the All Blacks were far from delivering an 80-minute performance. And they have been able to get away with it at times, but not on this occasion. I did note that Damien McKenzie came on at the 52nd minute for Sevi Reese, but he went back to fullback. Mm. Interesting there. I thought he may have slotted into 10. They kept Beauden on, and it didn't really flow from there for some reason. And yet McKenzie, we saw the impact he made against England only 2 weeks ago. So when I think he was playing, I think he might have been playing more at 10 on that occasion. So these are just all these little things sort of compounding there. And yet it was a funny old one because, you mentioned that neck roll, which wasn't on Offatunga Fasi. That was one of several strange calls. Nika Amashu Kelly from Georgia just seemed to be hot on areas like obstruction, and he was getting the TMO in his ear. I just thought the World Rugby was trying to get away from all this. They wanted less TMO interference. Now they're getting more, it seems. I found that quite bizarre. And of course, the sudden obsession with penalising obstruction from kick chasers is quite bizarre and is going to lead to some very cynical play moving forward if they're going to continue to be hot on that. I just thought, and that wasn't him running against the All Blacks as such. It was both sides, really, and we saw that in a couple of other tests on the weekend. So the All Blacks didn't get a great rub of the green with the refereeing, although I think perhaps it was perhaps for both sides in that regard. But that wasn't just the reason for the loss. They certainly didn't maintain their composure and their discipline and weren't clinical enough under pressure.
Croc rolls, neck rolls, these terms, I mean, they've got to be coached out of the players, quite frankly, because we saw a lot of it over the weekend, the players getting penalised for that kind of play. Maro Itoje, an English try, was ruled out because of that. So I think, you know, it's up to the coaches to coach that out of players now. The boxing, well, if a player's receiving the ball from the kickoff, you've got to get behind them. It's as simple as that. You know, you cannot be standing in front of them and just waiting, and that's boxing off as far as they're concerned. 209 tackles the French had to make. We only had to make 111. So plenty of ball for the All Blacks. How much do you think the fact that Samapeni Finau got injured after 2 minutes, very unfortunate for him, and Lakai had to come on, how much do you think that affected the way the All Blacks were going to approach this test?
Well, certainly it was a funny one because Lakai certainly played well. He scored the try but had a very good 78 minutes, but a very different type of player to Finau. Finau's a big bruising ball runner, and that would have changed the whole nature of what they were trying to do in the loose forwards. Did that mean Satiti now had to play more like a number six because Lakai is more of a 7-8 type figure, and he played well individually, but they weren't able to muscle up in the loose forwards. France had a 6-2 bench, of course. So, I think it probably did. I think at the breakdown, France was sort of hoeing into that area, very aggressive and very physical, as we know they can be, being big men. And it probably just paid later on when the All Blacks just looked a bit tired. I think, and yet it was a funny thing because they had a good platform at set piece and line out. At scrum and line out for the most part. So, yeah, it was a strange one, but I think they did have to reshape what they were doing when Lakai came on.
Yeah, I think Lakai had a tremendous test, and I think the point I was trying to draw out of you, and you've come up with it, is that, you know, later in the game when we needed those fresh legs, that we were one down on that, and the bench didn't seem to have quite the same impact this week.
No, that's 100% right. excuse me. But it was a funny one because Adi Savea was freed up, and he had a superb test.
He
ran like we know he can do it at number seven. So that was one byproduct of him moving into seven from the start, was that, you know, he just came out and he was damaging on the fringes. His work leading up to Lakai's try was tremendous. But the rest of the forwards probably got sucked into the tight stuff, which was okay in that first half, but would have started to wear them down a bit, I guess, and France was able to bring six forwards off the bench in that second half. So that was telling.
I think you said earlier a bit of predetermination around the Roygaard substitution by Ratama. Roygaard, he had plenty of running still in him, it would have seemed, and Ratama, you know, he struggled in the last few weeks.
Yes, he has, and this is where it's a funny one because Roygaard's certainly back to full fitness, and he went toe to toe with the best player in the world and his opposite Antoine Dupont, played really well and a tremendous piece of work ripping that ball off. I think it was Gregory Aldrit off that scrum to score the try. Nice. So Roygaard played very well, but the rest of his game was sharp. Some good kicks, good clearances at the scrum base. There didn't need to be a replacement. I know it's very rare for a halfback to go the full 80, but I just have a feeling that if Roygaard had stayed on until the 75-minute mark, the result could well have been different because Ratama did make several errors and the All Blacks at that moment just started to splutter on attack. So I think the coaches have got to look at the predetermination of what they're doing there, or the preconception of their substitutes. It doesn't have to happen if a player's playing well. We saw that was with Marcus Smith a couple of weeks ago with England. If he'd stayed on, maybe it was a different result.
And it doesn't have to happen at the 50-minute mark or the 60-minute mark. You know, it should be an intuitive. These should be intuitive decisions, surely. They were also affected, of course, by Geordie Barrett leaving the field before half time. So they lost another bench person early. Leonard Brown was on in about the 37th minute. So, yeah, five changes to that starting 15 for the All Blacks. So there's been a bit of disruption there as well. Brave performance, hell of a test match, but congratulations go to France for their third consecutive win over the All Blacks in Paris. You know, I thought they just had a little edge there, 3-2, flawless goal kicking. And I thought, interestingly, I thought they had the edge in speed.
Yeah, well, they when you say speed, you mean in terms of their outsides or their intensity of
out and out speed? Because I mean, we had two intercepts at one stage. You know, Reece intercepted, Jordan intercepted, but neither of them had the feeling that they were going to go all the way.
No, that's right. Yeah, well, that's interesting. I hadn't looked at it like that. But yeah, looking at someone like Louis Villard, who scored their try, he's certainly got gas. Gabon Villiers on the other wing has as well. So yeah, no, they certainly weren't short of gas on the outside, France. And you mentioned the goal kicking as well. I mean, we know Thomas Ramos is one of the best goal kickers in the world, but you have to say the All Blacks also kicked 100%. So if I can just say that was probably the best display of goal kicking I've seen in a test, probably since the 2009 Tri Nations in Hamilton, where Dan Carter and Francois Steyn kicked all their goals from wide out. So that was the goal kicking was a feature, but also, as you say, that speed that France was able to bring probably did surprise us a bit.
And their defence, I mean, you know, I thought Caleb Clark had an excellent test. He had a high work rate. He ran hard. He put pressure on the French defence, but they dragged him down. You know, they showed that they are a gutsy team with a lot of strength in a lot of areas.
Oh, look, 100%. And I think, too, although France missed 34 tackles, that was mainly because they had to make a whole lot more. Mm. And so the French defence was telling, even though they missed a lot more tackles than I'm sure Sean Edwards would like, their defence coach would like to see from them. But it's about scrambling. It's about pressuring the players. And so the All Blacks always looked dangerous, particularly in sort of the first 60 minutes, but they were able to scramble very well, France, and then they defended tigerishly right at the end, which was a key factor, not just when Rico Ioane shelled that ball, but it's also when you defend well. So that shows a side that is playing well within their systems. And we know Sean Edwards, he's the master at defence, and it certainly showed.
He was a hell of a rugby league player too. One French player who didn't get to enjoy the victory celebrations was Mathieu Jalibert, who took his ball and went home during the week. Not impressed with the standard of the bench seating, apparently, but yeah, that was an odd one, very French. The All Blacks now, you know, I mean, it's disappointing. It's disappointing to lose, but it was a great test match, and we move on now to Italy. They beat Georgia 20-17 in Genoa this morning, having trailed 6-17 at halftime. They needed a penalty try as help as well. Not exactly the kind of result which will have them full of confidence to take on New Zealand, Campbell. But on the other hand, the All Blacks need to prepare for this test with utmost seriousness, because for a lot of the players, it will be their first real opportunity since Japan, or indeed there could be some, possibly, who it will be their first opportunity.
Yes, well, that's right. There's going to be some interesting selections around the All Blacks, and I guess it's a catch 22. They really have to give a lot of their players who haven't featured much a run, but without making it look as though they're disrespecting Italy, who after all made good strides under Kieran Crowley up until the World Cup, where New Zealand gave them a hiding there. But they've also done fairly well recently. They won't be happy with that display, I would imagine, against Georgia, even though they won. So there is pressure on the All Blacks to finish on a high. I would imagine they'll give Sam Kane and TJ Perenara their farewells, probably in starting roles, because they'll be resting a lot of their other senior players. So mix and match. I'd love to see Stephen Perifetta have a run. Ethan de Groot hasn't even played on this tour, which is crazy when you look at it. So he's going to need a run, and they'll need to just be careful how they look at their loose forwards, because if Summer Penny Finau was ruled out with an HIA, with his concussion, then Lakai will have to play. Wallace Satiti may have to front up again, and we may see someone like Duplessis Kiriffi come onto the bench, or Christian Leo Willey. Yes. So a lot of these, there could be a couple of debuts, which would be nice. But on the other hand, the All Blacks will be looking for a pretty good performance to finish the year.
Well, I think if Sam Kane is, over his head injury, there probably won't be any debuts from the New Zealand 15 boys there. But if he's not, yes, as you say, it'll be one of Christian Leo Willey or Duplessis Kiriffi. The match will be played in Turin at 9:10 a.m. next Sunday, and it'll be refereed by Frenchman Pierre Brousset. You're listening to Just Rugby NZ with Grant Harding and Rugby News Magazine editor Campbell Burns. A lot of other tests on the weekend and some real thrillers. Ireland just held on against Argentina 22-19, having led 22-9 at halftime. South Africa beat England 29-20. Scotland beat Portugal 59-21. Fiji beat Spain 33-19, having been down 19-7 after 51 minutes. They turned on the afterburners after that. And Australia smashed Wales 52-20 this morning. Let's start with South Africa versus England, a match for which South Africa made 12 squad changes from their win against Scotland. Yet there was only one player I didn't know amongst them. Campbell, this wasn't vintage South Africa by any means, but they still found a way to win. They were down 20-19 in the second half. Pollard kicked a long-range penalty goal with the help of the crossbar, but the vital blow was what they do well. Quagga Smith carrying aggressively, making a mess of the defensive line. From the ruck, Delendi saw his chance, made a break. Cheslin Colby, one-on-one, and proved his incredible self for his second try. Halley's a good player, and they are the best team in the world, Campbell.
They are, but they had to work pretty hard against an England side that's not that bad, a side that could have beaten the All Blacks, or probably should have beaten the All Blacks twice this season. So England showed some good stuff. Marcus Smith set up a very fine first try for them. Mm. I see he stayed on the field for the full 80, but the box, they just did what they had to when it counted. Cheslin Colby, the best winger in the world, scoring a couple of tries. They weren't necessarily at their best, but they'll take 29-20 at Twickenham against England and move on to face Wales, where they should win by a whole lot more. So the Springboks did well enough, and again, they can just strike it at key moments and are quite deadly. And you've got someone like Delendi breaking from second five and just firing a very nice ball off his left hand straight onto Colby's chest. So, yep. It's fair to say that the Box are the best side in the world at the moment.
Yeah. And one rider on the victory is that South Africa played 10 of the last 12 minutes a man down, and really they should have been two men down because they transgressed immediately after the yellow card. I think it was pulling down a maul or something like that. And the ref gave Kalesi a further word. Sometimes refs should be braver, I think, in those situations. Two tries ruled out in the first 10 minutes of the second half, one for a forward pass by South Africa, one for a neck roll by Maro Itoje of England. The TMO got very active in this game as well. Personally, I felt Farsi's pass to Arensi met the requirement of being passed backwards out of the hands, but there you go, what do I know? Ireland struggled to get past Argentina, and they really did struggle when you consider that Argentina had a try ruled out after 2 minutes due to a head-on-head tackle earlier in play, and then conceded a 12-0 lead while under the yellow card. And Thomas Albanos, who was faultless in kicking for goal, missed a drop goal under no significant pressure early in the second half, would have tied the scores. But four yellow cards in this game, fairly messy again.
It was. And look, Ireland didn't really step up that much from their performance against the All Blacks, so they may have some real issues. And, of course, Andy Farrell's about to step down and take the Lions' mantle in a couple of weeks, so they've got some real work ahead. And they'll have to beat Australia in 2 weeks as well. Otherwise, we'll really start to wonder about them ahead of the Six Nations. Argentina, pressing hard. We know they're a good side, maybe number six, five or six in the world in real terms. So, yep, I mean, the Pumas, we know how well they did in the Rugby Championship, so it wasn't a surprise that they got that close and almost beat Ireland.
Yeah, look, this morning, Australia's Grand Slam dream well and truly alive. A 52-20 win over Wales, 8 tries to 2, hat-tricks to fullback Tom Wright and hooker Matt Fraser. The Wallabies on a mission. They were leading at 13 early in the second half when Samu Karevi received a yellow card, which was upgraded to a red. And in that 20-minute period, they went ahead, 40-19, Campbell.
Yeah, look, it was quite extraordinary to watch. Last year we saw the Wallabies, probably the most abject capitulation at the Rugby World Cup against the same opponents, just over 12 months on, and the shoe's very much on the other foot, because Wales now just facing the wall, 10 losses in a row. They scored a couple of tries, but they couldn't stop the Wallaby line-out drive. They couldn't stop Tom Wright. He scored a hat-trick from the back. Matt Fazler, the hooker, scored 3 tries from that line-out drive. And so the Wallabies have suddenly discovered this newfound confidence, but Wales in absolutely low ebb. And, well, Warren Gatlin now, 4 years ago, was incredible. He was voted the best rugby coach of all time, which was nonsense at the time and looks completely nonsense now, because his position is now virtually untenable and they'll lose to the Springboks this weekend. Mm. And I would say he may have to walk the plank or he'll be shown the door. So he's just not drawing the best out of a group of players. It's not all his fault, because I think the Welsh regions are suffering given their positions on the URC table. But he just may not have the cattle, but 10 losses in a row would indicate that there's something a bit deeper going on in Wales rugby, and it's not pretty.
No, it's not pretty at all. And he's not wearing a suit with a flower in it anymore either, I notice. So, you know, things are very dire there. Joe Smith, on the other hand, is getting the best out of his Wallabies. He made 6 changes for that test match, and they just came through. Well, last week, the Super Rugby teams were announced, fairly well signposted these days. Your thoughts on the defending champions, the Blues, Campbell, who welcomed back Beauden Barrett?
They do. Well, the first thing I saw with the Blues is that they've got too many players who can play fullback, which may not be a major problem. That just means versatility. But that they have a pretty relatively settled squad. Although I do note that they picked up probably the number 3 Canterbury hooker, James Mullen, as their third hooker, which was interesting. But they have very glad to see them promote Cameron Christie, very promising lock at the age of 20 who performed well for North Harbour in the NPC. So that was good. Peyton Spencer, son of Carlos, has been injured for about 12 months, but they've taken him on potential, and he's someone, if he gets fit, watch him go. But they have a lot of cover in certain positions in the back line in particular. So I would imagine that the Blues will certainly be right in contention for the title in 2025.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see James Thompson miss out on the other hand at lock. That's a strange one. The Chiefs finalists in both 2023 and 24 also fairly settled. They've brought Brody McAllister in as a replacement for Tyrone Thompson, and while Samisoni Taukeiaho still makes his way back from an Achilles injury. But the talking seemed to be around Ollie Mathis missing out.
Yeah, well, I think he's taken up a sevens contract. Very promising player, of course, oozing an X factor. I think he's very much a stronger attacking footballer than defensively, which may have counted against him. But I think sevens will be great for him. He's certainly one for the future. But they did go and get Jarrone Brown from the Brumbies to slot into that open side area, because Sam Kane wasn't available this season either, so he hasn't necessarily replaced him. But Mathis is certainly one for the future. He's still only 19, so I would expect to see him and the Chiefs maybe in a couple of years.
The Hurricanes, they've lost the experienced trio of Geordie Barrett on sabbatical in Ireland, Perenara to Japan, Artie Sevier to Moana Pacifica, and also 2 number 10s, one to injury. Good performers like Salesi Ryasi and Justin Sangster are also gone. I feel they're a bit vulnerable this year after sort of being the darling team of 2024.
They are vulnerable. They're going to have to solve that number 10 issue. We know the Crusaders didn't do so this year, so there's a lot going on, the likes of Riley Hohepper or Harry Godfrey, Lucas Cashmore. They may use Ruben Love there, who knows. I know they stocked up on locks, 6 of them. I'm not quite sure how that works, but that's probably 5 plus Caleb Delaney, who can play blindside. So they've signed Zach Gallagher from the Crusaders, so they're going for extra insurance there. I think that's probably one too many. You don't need more than 5, really, particularly when the Highlanders are short in that area. So major question marks over how they will cope with their roster, the Hurricanes, but still some very good players. And good to see TJ Clark, one of the form fullbacks of the NPC from Wellington, making the roster as well.
Yeah. Look, on paper, the Crusaders, they always look strong, but the performance they put out this year will linger until they put results on the board. They've got the first game of the season next season to start with.
Yeah, that's right. The Crusaders, they're just going to have to solve that, once again, solve that number 10 issue. They've signed James O'Connor. probably 7 years past his best, but could still offer value. So if he stays fit, kicks his goals and controls things, they might be all right, because they certainly have plenty of X factor out wide. And it'll be a question of how they cope in the pack. There's no more Owen Franks, no more Joe Moody, but they won't have concerns there. They've got, I think, three All Blacks props. So I don't think they'll have too many issues in the forwards, provided the likes of Barrett and Strange can stay fit. So I would expect the Crusaders to bounce back and to slide into the playoffs, which are now only six teams, of course.
Yeah, that's right, 11-team competition. We'll just remind them that one. The Highlanders, they'll have a new coach in Jamie Joseph. But I have to say that it's a huge shame for New Zealand rugby to have players like Paddy Parkinson and Max Hicks head overseas. Okay, Parkinson, a lot of injury problems. But for mine, Hicks was a real comer, hard-nosed forward for Tasman. Unfortunately, got injured during the NPC because he was on fire.
Oh, he was. He was the outstanding number six for Tasman in the first three rounds before he went down. But so the Highlanders are putting all their locking eggs in the one basket, Fabian Holland and Mitch Dunche. They're the only two specialists, which I cannot believe. They've actually named 40, and there's only two specialist locks. So Jamie Joseph will have a plan, but I'd love to know what it is, because Oliver Haig will probably have to slot into lock. Louis Naeta, the new player via Japan, will have to go in there. And probably Will Stoddard will have to perhaps suit up at lock. So I just can't get in my mind how New Zealand Rugby allows the Hurricanes to sign six locks and the Highlanders only two. I thought the whole idea was to have a decent spread of players and for franchises not to be so short in one position. So that's the major question mark for the Highlanders squad. They do have some X factor in the back line, even without Jacob Ratu-Maitaviki Neepkins, who will be out for most of the season. But they've got some good players. I would expect them to push hard for the playoffs, but that locking question will be the major one.
Yeah, that's not good. Oliver Haig, I mean, he was New Zealand 15 as a flanker, so to be, you know, thrust into lock doesn't sit well. Minor Pacifica, they've made a lot of changes, and there are a trio of Wellingtonians who will be a big help. Artie Savia, world-class. Jackson Garden-Bashup, a lot of experience, and will add depth at 10, along with Willie Harvili and Patrick Pellegrini. While I've got a lot of time for Lossie Filippo, the winger, as well. Another interesting name, Solomon Alamalo.
Yeah, very interesting. He's been a real gypsy over the years. He's come in from the NRL, but previously Tasman, Northland, Waikato, Southland, I think. I think he's even been named as a midfielder, but he's actually he's an outside back, fullback or wing. A lot of talent, but hasn't always performed for whatever reason. So it'd be interesting to see where he slots in. But certainly Artie Savia, with that signing, if he plays, you know, 13 or 12 of the 14 games, then he could be a real galvanising influence for that Moana forward pack, which looks a bit stiffer, and I would expect them to push hard for the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Artie will be a great player for them. Look, coming up next weekend, it will be France versus Argentina on Saturday morning, Ireland versus Fiji, Wales versus South Africa, and I have to say it's odds on that Wales will have a 12th consecutive loss, and Italy versus New Zealand on Sunday morning, with Scotland playing Australia and England, Japan on Monday morning. Surely England will finally snap their five-match losing streak. For me, the game of the weekend... Yeah, for me, the game of the weekend is Scotland versus Australia. Can the Wallabies take their Grand Slam dream into the final week, a clash against Ireland in Dublin?
Well, they can. 2 weeks ago, I would have had my doubts. In fact, at the start of the tour, I thought there is no way in hell they could possibly emulate the 1984 side. But they all things being equal, can certainly take down Scotland. It's hard to get a gauge on Scotland. They beat Portugal by 59 on the weekend. So that's potentially a very even game. But the Wallabies, if they go into that Ireland test, with three wins on the bounce, I mean, Joe Schmidt stocks, and he'll be heading back to face his old team. That'll be miraculous. But, hey, they've got their confidence up and their dander up. It wouldn't surprise me if they could take Scotland.
That is going to be a very, very interesting game. Look, next week we're going to wrap up the season. The All Blacks final test match. Campbell and I need a break from talking rugby as we have been. That'll be our 30th episode of the year, so tune in for that one. On behalf of Rugby News Magazine editor Campbell Burns, I'm Grant Harding, and we will catch you next week.